over Baghdad has been illuminated. We're seeing bright flashes going on all over the sky.
Listening to Radio Contra, the podcast of American Partisan, and the guerrilla radio transmission of the Mossy Oak Militia. This podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Palmetto State Armory, as well as Primary Arms. Get the equipment, the gear, the firearms, everything else that you need to support it. Time might be running out, folks.
You never want a serious crisis to go to waste. And what I mean by that, it's an opportunity to do things that you think you could not do before.
That are necessary at this time or contemplate. Now, if you have some questions, I'd be happy to
take
them.
Crisis management, that's what it's put into effect when it arrives?
Crisis management is in effect.
Who is making the decisions for the government right now? Who's making the decisions?
Constitutionally, gentlemen, you have the president, the vice president, and the secretary of state in that order. And should the president decide he wants to transfer the helm to the vice president, he will do so. As of now, I am in control here in the White House, pending return of the vice president, and in close touch with him. If something came up, I would check with him, of course.
So, what's really going on? Never, ever, as Rahm Emanuel brought us in, never, ever let a good crisis go to waste. That intro clip was first former White House Chief of Staff under the Obama administration, Rahm Emanuel, who later on became the mayor of Chicago, ran a number of off-the-books extradition sites, also known as black sites, for the intelligence agencies. It's well documented. Followed by the Ronald Reagan assassination attempt, and his Secretary of State, Alexander Haig, a retired general who was very much embedded with the military-industrial complex, stating on live television that he was now in control. A move that later led to his dismissal from the Reagan administration, but not without quite a bit of stir. And so again, I'll ask, what is really going on? The virus, COVID-19, Chinese virus in origin, is bad and it's going to get worse. But my question is it that bad? So far, the numbers don't support it. We don't have tens of thousands of dead and bodies piling in the streets. And perhaps that's due to a solid crisis management plan. And perhaps not. I don't think that the numbers support the response. Maybe it will next week. Maybe it will in a month. But not today, as of this recording. So are we to believe, as we're told, state after state on lockdown, city after city emptying, and your civil liberties being curtailed as we speak for a virus? I've said on this podcast that my greatest fear of all this is the curtailment of civil liberties. And here we are. Is protection and our protection from it worth the curtailment of our very way of life? Or is this conditioning for something else? We know that the stories regarding the so-called deep state, military-industrial complex, what have you, are real. We know this. We know this to be true. No matter what your political orientation, whichever team you claim to play on, you know that this is true. The very things that pro-Trump proponents say today are the things that the left have said for decade upon decade upon decade. That there was a shadow hand controlling the United States. That there was a great conspiracy controlling it all. That the generals behind the scene, that the industrialists, the capitalists, all in a covert cable, control the United States. I call these people the power brokers. Others call them the deep state. You can call them whatever you like. But let's look around. Is America of the end of March in the year 2020 the same America that we all knew just 2 months ago? A coup may very well be in the works. But no, no, no. That can't happen. This is America, damn it. These things don't happen here. And yet, we never let a crisis go to waste. Alexander Haig, I am in control here. Right? So, over the weekend, I spent my time with my family. It's something that I hope many of you have done as well. Friday, I spent my time with my parents, my family, and spending quality time with them. No phones, no distractions, just FaceTime. And it's something that I hope all of you did as well. We read portions of the Bible. We talked about a lot of things, and we also read portions of Clarence Larkin's classic, The Book of Dispensational Truth. It's important to remain faithful throughout all of this, and I've found Larkin's work to be highly insightful. It gives me personal hope for the future, that all this may someday end. If you can find a copy of his work and anything by him, I strongly suggest getting it, along with his version of a study Bible. It was introduced to me by a friend and a student not that long ago, and I have quickly found it to be a very important religious work. He lays out the connections between the Old Testament as well as the New Testament and how that moves forward into the book of Revelation. It's very important, and not to get super religious on anyone, but of course, as anyone who actually knows me knows that I am, it's very important as a perspective all on its own, and it puts other work from the Bible in perspective as well. I gave up energy drinks for Lent. It's been rough. On Lent, the 40 days that Jesus fasted, we're all called during Lent. The pious normally will give something up, and I gave up energy drinks. It has not been easy. I love to drink coffee, and I really can't imagine a world with me in it without coffee. But energy drinks are nearly as bad, and I'm a caffeine junkie, but I gave them up. And I love Red Bull. The struggle has been real. But hopefully you have given up something as well. It's a time for us to be faithful, and it's a time for us to recall those connections with our family. But on Saturday, I assembled my local team, my group. We got together. We confirmed zero on our own weapons. Real laid back. Just discussed things where we each saw ourselves, where we saw things as a group, and where we saw things moving forward. We went over our own courses of action, and we cross-trained some of the newer guys on the AK platform. It's my own carbine of choice. think longtime listeners, readers probably know that. And especially when you're training new people for combat with weapons, I think that it is very effective. But that's my opinion. I think that it's a simpler manual of arms for people who are not accustomed to it. There's many reasons that it has been popular across the world with guerrilla movements. Many reasons of which are very cheap lend-lease programs between the Soviets and other guerrilla groups out there. But with that said, the AK works, and it works very well in a woodland environment like where I live. In any case, those opinions are mine. I'm just one man, and obviously you're free to disagree. But what about this not letting a crisis go to waste? It's an interesting statement coming from a man very deeply embedded with this so-called deep state. What would happen if a so-called government got infected with COVID-19 or any other virus to such a scale that they could no longer function? For some of us, that might be a good thing. No government? Hey, leave me alone. I just want to be left alone. But for the power brokers, for that deep state, if for nothing else, they appear scared. The president has had too many close brushes with this virus, and it almost seems like to me that it was intentional. If we look back at it, the people who have shaken hands with him, who have met with him, several senior senators, and almost all of them that I know of have been conservative. It's very suspect to me, especially from a president who is a well-known germaphobe. Donald Trump was very loath to shake anyone's hand in the past, and now all of a sudden he does. Something's not right. What would happen if this took everyone out, and intentionally so? It's an interesting question, isn't it? According to Newsweek, a fervently liberal deep state propaganda publication, and we know this to be true, comes an exclusive inside the military's top secret plans if coronavirus cripples the government. Do you think that they would publish top secret plans in Newsweek? I don't think so, but let's read on. Coronavirus is also new territory where the military itself is vulnerable, and the disaster scenarios being contemplated, including the possibility of widespread domestic violence as a result of food shortages, are forcing planners to look at what are called extraordinary circumstances. Above top secret contingency plans are already in existence for what the military is supposed to do if all the constitutional successors are incapacitated. Standby orders were issued more than 3 weeks ago to ready these plans, not just to protect Washington, but also prepare for the possibility of some form of martial law. Well, at least they're telling you to your face. So let's look at this. There's no such thing as above top secret. All right, there is secret, there's top secret, and then there's compartmentalizations. For anybody that's held a TS clearance, we know this to be SCI, secret compartmentalized information. You are given access to subgroups based on your mission requirement. All right, if you have a need to know, then you will know. If you don't have a need to know, then you don't get access to it, period. But there's no such thing as above top secret. Unless you're talking about the Tinfoil Hat website. But, you know, that's a whole other conversation. And in addition, I will state that there are no standby orders issued for martial law. Now, I'm not saying that such things haven't been issued, but I am saying that there are none legally. Such an order would be a blatant violation of the oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States and would be considered sedition under Article 94 of the UCMJ. No officer or non-commissioned officer in the uniformed services of the United States of America would obey such orders as to take control of the United States government. To provide security for it is another matter. But taking control? Oh no. Oh no, no, no. Why would they have issued orders to do such a thing 3 weeks ago? And who the hell is they? Let's move on. We're in new territory, says one senior officer. The entire post-9/11 paradigm of emergency planning is thrown out the window, the officer jokes, in the kind of morbid humor characteristic of this slow-moving disaster that America had better learn who General Terence J. O'Shaughnessy is. He is the combat commander for the United States and would, in theory, be in charge if Washington were eviscerated. That is, until a new civilian leader could be installed. End quote. Mm-hmm. General Terence J. O'Shaughnessy, United States Air Force Commander, United States Northern Command. So, he's going to be the guy, huh? Well, let's take a look at what U.S. NORTHCOM's role is. To conduct operations to deter, prevent, and defeat threats and aggression aimed at the United States, its territories, and interests within the assigned area of responsibility, and, as directed by the President or Secretary of Defense, provide military assistance to non-military authorities, including consequence management operations. So he must work on part of a civilian authority. The general in charge commanding of NORTHCOM is not there to be in charge of the United States. So why would such a statement be made in this article? But there's more. NORTHCOM operates extensive domestic intelligence operations, which both share and receive information from local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies, employees of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Central Intelligence Agency, National Security Agency, Defense Intelligence Agency, National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, and other agencies remain or maintain offices at NORTHCOM and receive daily intelligence briefings. Northern Command has completed several joint training exercises with local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies, the Department of Homeland Security, and the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. In Exercise Vigilant Shield 2008, NORTHCOM, Pacific Command, and the Department of Homeland Security and numerous law enforcement agencies across the United States conducted exercises to test their response abilities against a variety of potential threats. People, this is not painting a good picture. Pipelining intelligence resources to all levels for domestic law enforcement. Who do you think they'd go after first? The guys on the corner? Slinging the dope? Maybe MS-13? Or maybe would it be you and me? Those of us who do know what the tools are that are used, that we used overseas, have been warning you, including myself. Well, that's fine. So, let's take a look. Who is this general? So, he's no conservative, that's for damn sure. And in fact, just last year, he was praised by former Clinton running mate and Democrat senator from Virginia, Tim Kaine, for his testimony to Congress contradicting the president on border security on a number of topics, including stating that the border was no need a national emergency, that the border was secure, that it presented no threat to the United States of America, which anyone with common sense who has been to the border knows is a lie. He was born in Canada, graduated from the United States Air Force Academy. He had a stellar career by all accounts, and prior to commanding NORTHCOM, he commanded the United States Air Force Pacific. He has a unique knowledge of a great number of topics, but chief among them is logistics, and that is why he is important to what may come next. So why is this hack publication, Newsweek, running an article like this? Because they are telegraphing intent. No one in their right mind would suggest that the United States have our basis of law, the Constitution, suspended and placed under military control, especially when the nation is in a state of panic. But as a last resort, the same people who have fought tooth and nail to get rid of Trump very well might. Folks, they very well might. The problem is that the military is infected as well. There are many troops that have come back from overseas who are now sitting under quarantine. Fort Bliss, Texas. Fort Drum, New York. Fort Dix, New Jersey. There are people infected in the United States Navy. The Air Force has reported cases. So in order to use the military for any sort of relief effort, they would first have to be healthy and immune to the disease. They would be immunized first. Right? But they can't do their jobs if they're sick, especially if this disease ends up being as bad as what we've all been told it is. So, with the army being infected, all of the people who would provide the boots on the ground being potentially compromised, who's going to or comprise that manpower? If anyone actually thinks that an army, that our army, can pacify one major city in the United States, let alone dozens, they need to have their head checked. Iraq was never totally pacified, and that was a relatively small area when you compare it to the size of the United States. We tried to pacify Iraq and Afghanistan at the same time, and we have been locked down in the longest wars in the United States' history, and the places are still out of control. If our army is sick, demoralized, and underpaid while being overworked, they will desert and they cannot be relied upon. Do you think that they don't already know that? So what would a peacekeeping effort require? It would require foreign manpower. And in a time where the Constitution and the rule of law has already been suspended, what would keep the powers that be from importing a mercenary army to keep the peace? Nothing. So far, who is not infected? There's not many cases that have been reported in South America. Brazil's had a few here and there. There's been a few in some of those countries, and we could say that maybe they're just under testing for it, and that's probably true on certain levels, but maybe there's another aspect to it too. We know that malaria drugs work on this virus, and the data from Central and South America that have been reported support this as well. It could be that they're simply not testing for it, but they also have regular cases in treatment for malaria, right? Every summer, they have a lot of cases of malaria, and they're able to treat for this disease. Russia and China have heavily invested in the region, both economically and militarily. So looking at it from a logistics perspective, South America is the only cluster of nations right now which could serve as a ground force in a peacekeeping operation inside the United States. How are the Europeans going to get here? They're overrun. You can forget about Africa. China does not yet have the logistics train to make it across the Pacific. And Russia doesn't have the military might to do so. It would have to come from South America. And the people who want America off the international stage would readily cheer this on. You know, I question a lot. But I also know that from what I'm seeing, there's not only organization, but larger plan coming together. They're not going to let a crisis go to waste. And the loss of our civil liberties, to me, is a greater disaster than any virus ever could be. So I'm going to ask you once more, what is really going on? Perhaps there's more to this than at first sight. I've always read military publications and I've been fascinated not by how we fight, but by how the Op-4 fights. Studying not only guerrilla warfare, but being very much a part of it, fighting 7 years of my life and being a trainer since the time that I left the United States Army here at home, it's interesting to me how to motivate people to take up arms. But that said, one of the most important books that I look back on was written by a guy named Viktor Suvorov, who at the time of his defection from the Soviet Union was the highest ranking Soviet intelligence officer to defect to the West. His book Spetsnaz gives a strong insight to their long-term plans to overtake the United States. I posted the last chapter up on American Partisan, and I highly encourage you to read it. I'm going to read a few key quotes from that post. In the United States, an epidemic of some unidentified disease breaks out and spreads rapidly. It seems to affect port areas particularly, such as San Francisco, Boston, Charleston, Seattle, Norfolk, and Philadelphia. Well, they got that part right. There are explosions practically every day in Paris. The main targets are the government districts, communications centers, and military headquarters. At the same time, terrible forest fires are raging in the south of France. All of these operations, because, of course, none of these events is an accident. And others like them are known officially in the GRU as the preparatory period, and unofficially as the overture. The overture is a series of large and small operations, the purpose of which is, before the actual military operations begin, to weaken the enemy's morale, create an atmosphere of general suspicion, fear, and uncertainty, and divert the attention of the enemy's armies and police forces to a huge number of different targets, each of which may be the object of the next attack. The overture is carried out by agents of the secret services of the Soviet satellite countries and by mercenaries recruited by intermediaries. The principal method employed in this stage is gray terror, that is, the kind of terror which is not conducted in the name of the Soviet Union. The Soviet secret services do not at this stage leave their visiting cards or leave other people's cards. The terror is carried out in the name of already existing extremist groups not connected in any way with the Soviet Union or in the name of fictitious organizations. The GRU reckons that in this period, its operations should be regarded as natural disasters, actions by forces beyond human control, mistakes committed by people, or as terrorist acts by organizations not connected with the Soviet Union. The terrorist acts carried out in the course of the overture require very few people, very few weapons, and very little equipment. In some cases, all that may be needed is one man who has a weapon, nothing more than a screwdriver, a box of matches, or a glass ampoule. Some of the operations can have catastrophic consequences. For example, an epidemic of infectious disease at 7 of the most important naval bases in the West could have the effect of having combined naval might of the Soviet Union's enemies. Think about that one. Halving the might of the Soviet Union's enemies, cutting their combat capability in half. Are they doing that now? The overture could last from several weeks to several months, gradually gathering force and embracing fresh regions. At the same time, the GUSM would become involved. Folks, are you not seeing this unfold today? I mean, the parallels are certainly there. Now, this was written as a product of its time in the early 1980s, and some parts of the script may have changed, but do not think for a second that the plan went away. well, how does this pan out? According to Suvorov, by August. That's his timeline, not mine. I have no way of knowing how this is going to end, and I fear it just as much as you do. But we are on a timeline, that much is certain. The basic scheme of maneuver appears to be the same. And you know, when you attack an enemy, you do not do so linearly, all right? So any of the field manuals you might have read, maybe some of the training you've had where, you know, you're only focusing on battle drills or whatever. That's not real warfare, okay? Real warfare is swarming your adversary through converging routes all at once, overwhelming his ability to effectively use his OODA loop, that is, observe, orient, decide, and act. He has no way to react to it. And by the time your enemy realizes that you are on the attack, it's already too late. You've already won. Alright? That's why converging routes is such an important thing to understand, and why it's one of the things that I focus on in the Scout course when I teach small unit tactics. With that said, folks, you've had plenty of time. Here we are. You know, what I'll tell you now is that there will be an end state to all this, and I do not intend on yielding, slowing down, or canceling any training event that I run. I am not afraid. You shouldn't be either. I prepare for an uncertain future. I am proactive towards an uncertain future. And so should you. With that said, how's your Steno looking? You need night vision. If you don't have it, you need it in one way, shape, or form, or another. Ready-Made Resources is my go-to, and it should be yours as well. They are a great company, and right now, they are being overwhelmed with orders for equipment. But with that said, it's never too late. There is a run on the supply of night vision right now, right? But you need that ability to be able to fight at night. It's a capability that once you have it, you will never understand why you operated without it. Let darkness be your ally, not your enemy. And with that said, folks, get ready for a fight. You know what you can do now. And get what you can now. Prepare to run whatever it is that you brung. Prepare to use whatever it is that you have. And until next time, folks, God bless you, and never ever stop training.